And good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. It is Wednesday, February the 3rd, 2016, 12:13 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you're tuned into the Now program here on WWGH Radio. This is Scott Spears, and do want to remind you to check out our new website just launched last week, Show Archives. You can listen to any of the programs, Charlie Evers, Sober Joe, Wittenberg's Door, Heaven Express, my program, Swap Shop, Voice of a People, Marion Today with Fran Vall, all of the great programs here on WWGH Radio, Talk of the Town with Marge Hazelett, all archived online for your listening pleasure anytime you want to do that. www.wwgh1071.com. And we all have new emails. It's just our first name. Scott, mine would be Scott at WWGH1071.com, but that goes for everybody else as well. So check that out. Coming up in hour number two today, we're going to be talking with Congressman Jim Jordan about a lot of interesting things. Certainly see where Marion's going or where what his thoughts are for Marion's future and some things that he's been up to, and we'll certainly talk a few minutes about the national political scene, which certainly heated up this week as the Iowa caucuses are over. Tonight we have a town hall meeting on CNN between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton, the remaining two on the Democratic side of things for the next presidential election. And next week we head into New Hampshire, 6 days away, so a lot of stuff going on. And I think there's a Republican debate on Saturday, I think, maybe. We'll check that out. But joining me today here in hour number one, this is going to be a lot of fun because we're going to get a Democratic-Republican perspective from a local level. Steve Chafin, who's been in here before, is here with us today as the resident Democrat, and Ted Coulter joins us from the Republican side to get we'll get their takes on what is going on in the world. Thank you both for coming in today.
You're welcome.
Good to see you.
Yeah. Want to start with the Iowa caucuses here. Well, actually, before we do that, Rand Paul dropped out today.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, he just did this morning. Huckabee has dropped out, and Martin O'Malley is gone.
Right.
Steve, what's your feeling on those three after the Iowa caucuses calling it a day?
Well, O'Malley did pretty poorly. I think he got like 7 precincts or something of the 1,300 in Iowa, so I think he was smart to get out. Believe it or not, it's a lot of money, a lot of time involved. It's stress on your family, so probably a good idea to get out. The other two, you know, I'm not really sure. Rand Paul was doing really well in the beginning, and he represents a certain wing of the party that probably should still be heard. So I don't know. Who was the other? Huckabee?
Huckabee.
Yeah. If Huckabee didn't do well in Iowa, he won the Iowa caucuses some time ago. So if he didn't do well in Iowa, then probably time for him to get out too, yeah.
I think it raises some really interesting questions, them going out, because you look at Huckabee, who won Iowa, I think, back in 2008, Santorum in 2012, and then you had Rand Paul, his father, in the big libertarian movement that was always very active at all the, you know, conservative political action committee meetings and those type of things. Where did their support go to, and what grabbed that support they had before from the evangelicals with Huckabee and the libertarian movement with Rand Paul? And that's, I think, the interesting curvature, which really kind of in our discussion today hopefully will come out as to what got us to this point and what then may show us what's going to happen in the future here. What's the electorate been thinking and doing?
And on the Republican side, they have such a diversity. You wouldn't think they do, but when you really look at it, they have a real diverse demographic they're trying to patch together. And if they don't patch that together before November, I don't see how they're going to win. Our constituencies, even though there's some contrast between Bernie and Hillary, we're really pretty solid. Everybody likes both Bernie and Hillary. We like O'Malley and some of the other ones we're looking into. So we're pretty united, and we're definitely going to be united against whoever the Republican nominee is. So,
now, I think most people would say there's a lot of contrast between Bernie and Hillary, maybe more than people want to admit. I saw a graphic this morning, which I think is accurate, that 84% of people in Iowa who are college students voted for Bernie.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why are people, young people, not turning out for Hillary Clinton? Why are they turning out for the 74-year-old, self-identified socialist, Democratic Socialist?
Well, all I can tell you, Scott, is when I was that age, when I was in my 20s, I believed in Democratic Socialism, and I still do to a certain extent. But Ted Coulter has a bumper sticker on his truck that says freedom, not socialism, or something like that. It's in response to the health care thing. If we can't even get people to believe in some kind of a realistic national health care program, we're not going to get socialism in this country. So as you grow up, and the opposite demographics, people who are over 50 are like 85% for Hillary. So as you grow up, you grow out of this idealism. It's a good thing to have idealism in the party. We love it. We hope them, these young people stay involved. We had Joe Newmarker on here a couple weeks ago on Linda's show, and he expressed that point of view. They're idealistic. They believe they can get a lot of things done, and that's great. And we want that in the party. But the people in my age group who are more realistic, who see just to even get health care was a major struggle, we're not going to get free college for everybody in this country. It'd be great. It's not going to happen. We're not going to get, you know, all the other programs that Bernie wants to institute. It's great. We should have these ideals. We should have a lively discussion within the primary, which we do most of the time. So it's a good thing for the party. It's a healthy thing for the party. We'll come out of it unified by the end of the summer and move on and win in November.
But here's the dynamic, Steve, that I think is interesting. We're down to two on the Democratic side. It's either going to be Hillary or Bernie. That's the way it's going to play out. Now, Hillary has some problems with her emails and has had some problems a lot. Well, it's still there. I mean, they were talking about it hard last week. Now, if she should not make it, there's only one other choice right now, and it's going to be Bernie. Can a socialist, a self-admitted Democratic socialist with no social, with no super PACs or anything of that nature, beat the Republican Party in the general?
No.
So this could be trouble.
No, because it's not. This whole email thing is way overblown. There's nothing to it. They've been beating her up for the past year on that. There's just nothing there. Most people in this country don't give a crap about the email. Even Bernie himself said, let's get off this stupid email business. So that's not going to go anywhere. They've been after the Clintons. Even before Bill ran in 92, they've been after the Clintons. So that's not going to, they're not going to give up on that, but it's not going to go anywhere. Hillary's going to win the nomination, and she's going to go on to be our first female president.
Okay, Ted, I'm going to come to you in just a second, but if that has not hurt her, if it doesn't mean anything, what has hurt her? Why is she running neck and neck with Bernie Sanders?
Okay, what has hurt her is this concept that she's not trustworthy. And I talked to a lot of people and said, well, there's just something about her we don't trust. It's because she's such a political operative. Her strengths are her experience and her involvement over the years. But it's also her weaknesses. That's why the young people are not really cozying up to her right now. They just don't trust this institutional political activity. But we're a complicated political system. I mean, look at the caucuses. Look how complicated that whole thing was. It's a complicated political process. I'm very involved in it. And people say, well, you're too involved. You're not objective. But if you want to get something done locally, and Ted will probably agree with this, or statewide or national, you've got to be involved. You have to understand the personalities, the complicated rules, the money, all the influence that goes on. My favorite show is House of Cards. Have you watched that?
I've seen that.
Okay. So you see how the things go on. Now, Frank Underwood is the most manipulative politician we could have. And that's what they see in Hillary. They see a little manipulation. But, you know, it's getting things done, Scott. It's not – you don't want to see the sausage being made. You just want to see the sausage, right?
Ted, do the emails mean nothing? Is that correct?
Well, I think that's a little bit conclusive in that regard. You know, it depends on what skin you get, and of course, we're just peons here in Marion County, all due respect, and whether you know she's going to be indicted or not. But when you have emails, I know the Clinton campaign is now saying that they were overclassified, and you know, and therefore they weren't. But the others had said that you know there was information that could you know led to people's lives being you know lost and killed in that regard. So I think that may be play out. Of course, that'd be very interesting to have a Democratic candidate who's been indicted, in all due respect.
Well, that being said, if she is indicted, isn't that going to be a problem? Whether or not she did it, I mean, that's going to be big, big news. Well,
yeah, because I think this is what I want to give a take here on the thing of what I feel is a current going. And I speak for myself. But I don't speak literally for the Republican Party or for any entity or group in all due respect. But Bernie Sanders said to me in this context even this morning, he said people are tired of establishment politics and establishment economy in all due respect. And when we look at what's been going on here in this perspective of things is that whether it's from the liberal standpoint of Bernie Sanders, in terms of money influence in that regard, or from the right side of the political spectrum in terms of what Ted Cruz says, the Washington cartel, that unless we're going to have a chance to have debate to correct problems, we got to take away the corrupting money influence. Otherwise, we're going to continue to be polarizing against each other because they use it against us, so to speak, in that aspect.
The corrupting money, isn't it interesting that I believe Bernie Sanders is the only candidate without a super PAC?
Yes, zero. Yeah. He's got 75,000, but then we have Hillary Clinton, all to respect, you know, with the Clinton Foundation. Her daughter, what, has an $8 to $10 million apartment in New York, and she's a stay-at-home mom. You know, and you can go on about the $145 million contributions and influence. But yeah, it's a cloud that people are concerned about. And I think that is what's one of the things that's hurting her and surprised her so much in Iowa, as it is a message, I think, if their electorate is going to come out. They're just not an electorate. A New York Times won the poo-paw the other day, I think yesterday's edition, that, well, it's just an angry bunch of people. They're not satisfying their lives. They're against the status quo. But I think it runs deeper. I think it's acknowledgement of the electorate realizing more that there are influences, that if we're going to take away the power from the few who over the many, we're going to have to take away the money factor.
Why are the young people on college campuses supporting and giving Bernie Sanders crowds like you wouldn't believe across this country?
You know, Winston Churchill had an interesting quote. He used to talk, when you're young and 25, you're a liberal or you don't have a heart. He said, once you become 35, you're a conservative or you don't have a brain. And it's like, Steve, you mature in what's practical in that regard. So I think there's a great deal of idealism there. I mean, even at the one meeting he had with her, I think was on the news, you know, one candid young person asked her this question about dishonesty. But I think it is that hoovering of that. You know, you have the concerns of, okay, with a husband who was impeached, a husband who disbarred, a husband who had affairs in that regard, was Whitewater back to her days, Benghazi to hers. It's an ironic current. So you have to be able to trust your leaders. So I think that does resonate. I think from a youthful standpoint, when you're idealistic, honesty does matter, and that's a concern.
Wouldn't it be a problem for the Republicans if he was the candidate? I've heard many people say that he would be much harder to run against than Hillary for the reasons you just said. We can bring up Hillary's husband. We can bring up Whitewater. We can bring up Benghazi. Mm-hmm. We can bring up everything she's done. Bernie Sanders is a senator who's popular with kids, and he's already said, I am a socialist. You're not going to offend him because his constituency already knows that's what he is.
But Scott, they're not going to elect a socialist in this country. We can't even get people to agree on fixing our roads and highways by a little extra gas tax. We can't get the Republicans in Congress to do anything about infrastructure or income inequality. We're not ready for socialism in this country.
So you think this is a foregone conclusion for Hillary?
Absolutely.
Why are they so frightened? Because the Clinton campaign,
no
I
way.
Would...
They're not frightened.
When I see their
They've
people...
Got, they, look what happened in Iowa. You know why she won Iowa? She had a better organization. She got in there over a year ago. She had those caucuses are run by the party. They're appointed by party people. The institutional party people in every state in this country are for Clinton. The Clintons have a long history of being involved in the party, raising money for the party, supporting candidates in off-year elections. In Ohio, we had our own caucuses in January, ran by the party. All the labor people, they're all for Hillary. I'm just saying the institutional party establishment is for Hillary, and that's why she's going to win.
But did not the Republican Party underestimate Trump when he came on the scene? Yeah. I remember the first 2 weeks, that was a joke.
Everybody
he was
did.
Nothing, and boy, he's become pretty viable.
But you know why their system's totally different? You know, Trump got on the ballot here in Ohio by his own signature. He didn't have to go get petitions or get any organized labor support or organized business support. He signed a thing and paid some money and got on the ballot. So they have a different system than we do. I think they're less democratic, but that's just my personal opinion.
Is Hillary Clinton, Ted, is Hillary Clinton a foregone conclusion?
As the president, no, in that regard. I think because just like Bush was not a foregone in terms of Jeb. You know, I think it started out, he was high on the polls, you know, millions and millions of dollars and all due respect on the thing. And I think the Republican National Party had a thought, well, all we need to do is be more inclusive. We're going to reach out. We're going to have, like as Rubio said, we're going to have in his Gang of Eight thing that fell through. We're going to have amnesty. We're going to have a pathway to citizenship. And that all went down, and we're going to be good. But they didn't understand this underlying current of the dissatisfaction with the establishment, you know, politics. So I think that's what I see a dynamic here is after the Iowa caucuses the other night, if you heard Hillary talking, and everybody's got their own take, but I'll give you my little take, and other maybe conservative commentators have said this, she sounded angry in some ways in that regard. And that, but also, she also sounded more and more like Bernie, in all due respect. And what may happen, what Bernie may do, is pull her to the left, and will she be able to moderate at the final and then the conclusion, or is she going to be so far out there hanging that she's going to have some things to be able to be picked off on, in all due respect?
Let's go over to the Republican side, because now news is garnered by Twitter, and just a couple hours ago, Donald Trump released a tweet that was kind of interesting. This is the tweet from Twitter from Donald Trump. Ted Cruz didn't win in Iowa. He stole it. That is why all of the polls were so wrong and why he got far more votes than anticipated. Bad! Exclamation point.
Wow.
Is that good news, Ted?
Well, I think he's the marketer in that regard. And the question is whether he's going to produce the substance in that regard. You know, I think, you know, Ted Cruz is a credible, you know, debater, statistician in that regard. I'm getting his campaign together, and I think that may be weighing in the play here. I know the establishment's happy with Rubio. You know, I don't know if that's much as a electorate surge, as a media surge, but I think the Trump may fade away here gradually.
I think that shows he's pretty desperate to try to spin him like this. They say he's going to lose New Hampshire even.
Well, what happened? What happened?
I'll tell you what happened. There was a good article in the Washington Post a few days ago that did the analysis of how the money was spent in Iowa. Cruz spent so much money on data gathering, on field work, and on analysis. You know what Trump spent his money on? Baseball hats. I mean, you don't win elections with trinkets, sorry. Mm-hmm. And he himself admitted he didn't do a very good job in the ground game. Those caucuses are really difficult. I went out there to work for Hillary in 2008. They're extremely difficult to organize and pull people out on cold nights and then get them to stick with your candidate, because there's a lot, you probably saw it on TV, there's a lot of back and forth that goes on until finally they make decisions. So Trump just didn't do a good job organizing.
But Cruz is already in South Carolina. He's kind of given up, it looks like, on New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. So who's going to win New Hampshire if
looks
not
like
Trump?
Looks like Rubio.
Rubio.
Right now I'd say Rubio's got a good shot at
Rubio
that.
Rubio look like the guy?
I wouldn't put Cruz out on a thing. Of course, you know what? We have Kasich and Christie and Jeb Bush putting a lot of money in it, I mean, in that regard. So I wouldn't necessarily put a Rubio at the top on that one.
Who did that? Guy from Massachusetts, Scott, what was his name? Walker? The guy was in Congress.
Yeah, Scott Walker.
Who did he endorse? Did he endorse Kasich or?
I think it was
Rubio.
Yeah, it was Rubio.
Okay.
If I remember right. That might not be true, but that is true.
So if he gets those kind of endorsements and works it hard and spends some money, and he's got some money now coming off Iowa momentum, I think he's got a good shot at winning that. Yeah.
Now, this is what Donald Trump said this morning, but I saw a clip, and I'm not sure if either of you saw it, but Chris Christie laid into Marco Rubio. I don't have the clip with me, but laid in and said he was pre-planned. He doesn't take questions from the audience.
I saw that.
He called him the boy in the bubble. Okay. That's what he called him. Is that good for Christie to be doing that for a guy who obviously is surging in the party?
Well, I think he's desperate too, and there's no doubt about that.
But wasn't there a Ronald Reagan rule, thou shalt not attack other Republicans?
That's right.
That's
out the window.
Yeah, what may be back in the window, though, is that trying to get together again that old Reagan coalition, although the demographics of the country has changed since then in that regard. But that's what's going to be the play. I think it'll be the play with the Cruz campaign.
Not going to happen, Ted. That coalition's dead.
Well, here's something that's interesting that I find. Now, there have been a little sharp elbows on the Democratic side, but they don't attack each other. They try to be very friendly, and a lot of times they even say, I like Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
I like Hillary Clinton. I thought the email line back in the first debate, you know, where he defended her. Who defends the person you're running against? He didn't have to do that. But on the Republican side, it's been a little more vicious, and maybe Donald Trump started that. I remember the first 2 weeks he was in, if people remember this, Jeb Bush was the front runner over there.
That's right.
And he did nothing but call him low energy. I mean, he destroyed Jeb Bush in those first 2 weeks, took him out of that spot, and Jeb Bush has not recovered till today. And that was just name calling. That had nothing to do with politics, saying he was low energy. Mm-hmm. What's going on over there?
In the self-destruction.
Now, when you say over there, you mean on the Republican side in that regard?
They should be a little nicer, don't you? Would you like them to be a little nicer toward each other?
Well, I mean, substance is a key thing. You know, you had the various debates, you know, especially with the one broadcasting unit when, you know, they got called out by, you know, Senator Cruz in terms of trying to pick fights between two of them. And I think that's part of it. Part of it's in media, I think, generated also in some, you know, desperation and all due respect. But I think what everybody has to focus back on, and I'm hoping what this election becomes about is, from my own perspective, is a question of electric, you know, bring the power back to them and away from the moneyed interests in that regard. And I think that's what should be going on, rather than the daytime drama things of Trump and some of the other candidates, which brings us away from the main issues.
We're going to take a quick minute break here, come back with Steve Chaffin, Ted Coulter. Interesting conversation. Stay tuned to WWGH Radio. A lot of interesting stuff here to talk about in this hour.
He's talking about now with Scott Spears, Monday through Thursday, 12:10 to 2 p.m. right here on WWGH Radio. from legendary comedian Kay Ballard performing the fast food song.
Oh, there's one song that you like. I feel that, you know, fast foods have ruined the world.
Oh.
On the Champs-Élysées, on the Appian Way, there's McDonald's. By the Tomb of King Tut, there's a Chuck Full of Nuts and McDonald's. At the Scala, they sing by a Big Burger King where the Styrofoam boxes go sweet. What's the use? What's the hell? I just heard Taco Bell went and franchised a wing at the Louvre. You know, I could go on and on and on, but that's it. I love things that are topical and that are kind of true.
The legendary actress and the voice of Ursula from The Little Mermaid, Pat Carroll.
Well, what would we do without gossip, for heaven's sake, Scott? Oh, it's naughty, but it's a certain catty side of all of us. Oh, good Lord. When you think of the gossip sessions you've had with friends over the years, it's wonderful. Yeah. It's like putting your hands in front of a lovely fire.
I will do
anything you want, Scott. You know I enjoy being on your show. Because well, just let me talking and I keep going.
It's now with Scott Spears, Monday through Thursday, 12:10 to 2 p.m. right here on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Streaming live on the internet at www.wwgh1071.com. Join me.
Hey, Scott Spears back with you here on this Wednesday, February the 3rd, 2016, 12:34 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Joined this hour by Ted Coulter and Steve Chafin for some political talk here. Ted, before we went to the... Oh, by the way, I do want to remind people the town hall meeting is tonight on CNN, the Democratic Town Hall at 9 p.m. tonight on CNN, if you want or wish to watch that tonight. After coming out of the Iowa caucuses, what do you expect to see tonight, Steve?
Well, the same disagreements. I mean, it's not that the Hillary and Bernie disagree fundamentally on the principles that we need to move the country forward. You know, the frustration that everyone's experiences is because the income inequality has been going on since the Reagan era. So they're in agreement with that. It's how we get there. It's not a lot different from sometimes what Ted and I talk about. We agree we need to get money out of politics. We need to get more people involved in the process. But how you get there is important. And that's the difference between Hillary and Bernie. Hillary's been, you know, Secretary of State, she's First Lady, she's been a senator, she's been working behind the scenes. Her and her husband have worked since the 70s, actually, to make the process work more effectively for people and to bring about equality, more especially equality with women and children. And these are the issues that she's going to bring forward in her experience, whereas Bernie wants to do it all now. He wants a revolution. Well, we're not a revolutionary country. We were 200 years ago, but we're not a revolutionary country now.
2 points I want to make. The Republican debate is Saturday night in Manchester, New Hampshire. It'll be on ABC News. I think that must be ABC Network. But ABC News this coming Saturday, February the 6th, is the Republican debate in New Hampshire. So now we have that updated. Interesting thing yesterday. Mary Ellen Withrow, 40th Treasurer of the United States, under Bill Clinton, obviously a Hillary supporter, self-described, said that if she is not the candidate, that she would support Bernie Sanders.
We all will. We'll unite behind.
But you said you don't believe he's electable. I think you said
that. I don't, but, you know, I'm going to support the Democratic nominee, whoever that is, whether it's Mike Dukakis or Al Gore or John Kerry or whoever it is.
Isn't it hard, though, to support somebody you don't believe is electable?
No, I'll support any candidate. I would rather have an electable candidate. That's why you go out and do recruitment and you have primaries. You'd rather have a candidate who's the most electable candidate you can get. But I'm not going to throw anybody under the bus just because I don't think they're going to win. I'm going to support him anyway.
Ted, what did Donald Trump do to this election?
Well, I think what Donald Trump did was open up the doors that we could discuss issues and challenge, you know, the establishment in that regard, from top-down politics to political machines, which are going to really advance someone's self-interest in that regard, and really tapped into that crack, to that frustration of what's going on in Washington, D.C., as again, as Cartel Washington, as Mr. Cruz says. I think the other thing is, I want to go back to what Steve said. It was kind of interesting, and I respect Steve in that regard in the sense, you know, he supports the Democratic, but I think that's where the frustration is politics. Okay, of politics and party over principle in that regard. And it's quite an interesting thing we talk about. I know what this issue, you know, when they come up about the idea of income inequality, I can appreciate the theory behind it. But I think where the Democrats are getting themselves into trouble. They're taking themselves so far to the left. You know, they really have the talk of attacking the rich, taking from the rich, wealth redistribution. We're basically talking, you know, Marxist socialist, you know, theories and arguments of free things, you know, for people. And the question becomes, what is the limits of how much free stuff can we give? You know, if we have food stamps, we have metro housing, we have college grants in all respect, we have free phones and everything else, how much are we supposed to give everybody $50,000 a year and a Cadillac every 3 years in that regard? You know, how much are we supposed to take 90% from everybody in all due respect? And I think that's where the Democratic Party, if they maintain this trend, well, that's where they won't be the right side of what the Tea Party or the extremists. It's going to be the extremists on the left or maybe bringing down the Democratic Party in this fall election.
We'll come back to Steve in just a second, but I do want to let people know if they are listening and have a question, they can call in 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Is Donald Trump to the Republican Party what Bernie Sanders is to the Democratic Party in this sense? If Donald Trump gets it, is he your guy? Does he become your guy? Or is it more about the ideology? Is it, I'm going to support the Republican, even if it's not the Republican I like?
Well, again, speaking for myself in that sense, who's going to be on the other side? If it's Bernie Sanders, then you know, Trump. Is it, if I want to follow principle, which I think the party should, rather than the machine, let's get somebody elected type of thing and advance self-interest and special interest in that regard, no in that regard on the thing. But it's going to be depending on who the Democratic candidate, who still will bring people together. And that's the nature of politics and coalitions that's come together of the lesser of the two evils.
If it's Hillary and Trump, who would you vote for?
It'd be Trump.
Really? So it's going to be Trump either way? Because those are the two we're left for.
Right.
If he's nominated.
Yeah, if he's nominated. I mean, right. Everybody's going back through his history and his rebel tendencies and all those things and positions in the past in that regard. And that's where the unknown card, and I think that's where he's dangerous, you know, if you're following principles in this election.
If I am regular Joe on the street who does not really have a party affiliation, who's my moderate candidate? Who's the candidate that if I believe Democratic issues and if I believe Republican issues, if I'm fiscally Republican and I'm socially Democrat, who's my guy? Who's my girl or girl woman?
On their side?
Either way.
Oh, Hillary, for sure. She's moderate. Very moderate.
Is she fiscally?
Yes.
She's fiscally?
Well, look at what Bill Clinton did. What did Bill Clinton do? Okay, the first thing he tried to do was get the economy back on balance, fairness, passed a small income tax increase. It set us on the path of prosperity for the next 8 years. What was the debate in the 2000 election? It was the debate over what to do with the surplus. We had a surplus for the first time, and we couldn't decide if we're going to strengthen Social Security and Medicare or give tax cuts. Well, Bush comes in, talks everybody into tax cuts. Down the tubes we go. So she'll restore those same principles we had during the Clinton era of fair tax fairness, peace and prosperity, so that we can have a strong economy at home and be safe abroad. She won't get us into any crazy wars like Bush did. She's a diplomat. She's the world's greatest diplomat. She'll be out there making peace with the Chinese and the Russians and cutting deals. We have to have an operator in this global economy to make things work. So Trump boasts about his deals, but you don't have to boast about things. You just quietly get the job done.
Is that right, Ted?
Well, I guess, but first thing I asked Steve, what was Hillary Clinton's great being Secretary of State accomplishments in that regard? And I'm sure Steve can mention them, but I'm blank right now to list any of them in my mind that she's accomplished. So I don't see that. What I see is a very self-interested person. I see the balancing the budget was because of a Republican Congress in those years, not because of the Clinton leadership in all due respect. But I think the elephant in the room here that's not being addressed is the incredible national debt of, what, $19-20 trillion, unfunded liabilities of $200 trillion in that regard. But yet we have Hillary and Bernie saying free college and free health care and everything else.
Not Hillary. No.
Well, she after she lost in Iowa, I think she used the word universal health care in her response.
We'd like to get there, but we're not going to get there today or tomorrow.
And that's what's going to eventually lead to the economic collapse and the real suffering of the American people. But nobody wants to talk about that because that's not a quick blurb that people can get out there and get votes for.
I want to throw this out there quickly because I think it'll be interesting, considering he's only got 10 months left. President Barack Obama, twice elected, 10 months left on his term. He's done some things. A lot of people have said he's fiscally irresponsible. Ted, where does he go in history?
Yeah, where? Where has he been fiscally irresponsible at?
A lot of people say that.
Well, look how much the debt has doubled.
No, the debt has actually decreased under President
Obama. No. The national debt has went up zillions, I mean, trillions of dollars. I mean, maybe in the budget they say, well, we're going less in debt each year.
Right, we're decreasing the debt.
But we're not attacking the national debt. The national debt actually keeps on growing. We keep on adding to the debt, and that's going to be his legacy. The other question is really going to become with the national, you know, health care in terms of Obamacare, if we can use those terminology terms in all due respect, is it really going to be successful? Is it going to lead to a collapse of the health care system and then fall into things that will walk right into one universal?
Well, this is an interesting conversation to have, because I think and people can disagree, but there was a poll taken not too long ago where they said they named a president and they said what word or phrase is so closely associated with them. George W. Bush was Iraq. Bill Clinton was Monica Lewinsky, oddly enough. George W. Bush was Read My Lips. And Ronald Reagan was just very popular. They didn't really associate anything with him, but honestly, Alzheimer's disease, and that's after, but has nothing to do with when he was president. Very popular president. What are we going to say about Obama? We can say what he did, but what is the legacy of the man? What are we going to say 4 years from now about former President Obama?
He saved us from a depression.
For depression, which I think the deregulation, which was led by the Clinton administration, and the housing market led to a collapse, maybe in that regard on the thing. And then we had, of course, all the money pumped in to bail out the banks, which again, those are the special interests. I mean, it depends what perspective. I mean, that's a fair question, you know, Mr. Spears, but in terms of what perspective can be, we're going to have totally opposite positions on the thing. Is it going to be a transformation that led to an economic demise and collapse, or is it a transformation that he was, you know, a savior in every regard?
Will he be asked to campaign for Hillary or Bernie?
Yes, and he will.
And will he be good? Will he be an asset?
Yes.
Because a couple years ago, the Democrats thought he was a hindrance, and they took a big loss in the election.
In the 2012
or
2014?
I think it was 2012.
Former presidents are always good to have out. They help fundraise, and they draw crowds, and that's important when you're trying to get volunteers. And so I think he'll be an asset.
Is the Bush family going to be welcomed back to the Republican convention, which will be in Ohio this year? I'm confused. Do they not come on their own, or are they not invited? Because I'm always shocked that the two living Republican presidents do not come to the convention. I remember we saw Ford.
We have our former presidents at the convention.
But, you know, Jimmy Carter's not treated all – he's kind of pushed to the side.
He's got a following.
He does speak. Sure. He has asked to speak. Right. But what did the Bushes do to the Republican Party?
They're hated by a lot of the Republicans, from what I understand.
Well, I mean, that is. I said in my opening comments, first he was the anointed one. We just need to be more inclusive. We'll change our immigration policy, reach out to minorities. And they realized that he was regarded as part of the establishment, the ones who makes the deals in the back rooms, who leads to, you know, special interest money going out of our, whether it be out of our tax dollars that are collected, or out of money we're borrowing, or the money we're printing in that regard on the thing. And so that's why I think he fueled the parts of the Republican Party that were anti-establishment and were tired of the few ruling the many.
And just to keep
like
that
Bernie Sanders.
Well, just to keep this fair, Jeb Bush is in New Hampshire, and who did he call out? Barbara Bush is campaigning with him right now, who's a very popular figure, sure. Which made me think of something. Sometimes I think we forget Hillary Clinton was a first lady of this country.
That's right.
Would we ever speak about Barbara Bush, Nancy Reagan, Rosalind Carter, Jackie Kennedy, in the manner that we speak about her? Is it her own fault, though, because she's went further than others? Because people spoke nasty about Eleanor Roosevelt.
You're talking about Hillary.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I think that's it. It's a generational change. You know, Hillary's a woman, independent, strong, on her own, running for Senate, now running for president. It's historic. So you're going to get some of that resistance. You know, a lot of women didn't support the right to vote back in 1920. There was a little bit of a struggle there, if you've read any or seen any of the movies about that. So it takes time, but I think this will be a great transformation, a great generation, and you'll see the young people get on board once she's the nominee.
I was shocked that, this didn't get much press, I thought, that when Hillary and Obama kind of had this meeting not too long ago, and at the end of it, Hillary said, well, I would think about appointing Obama to the Supreme Court. Now, to me, that was a flag that maybe some kind of deal is being made there.
I don't know what you mean.
Well, to the extent of President Obama is going to be very young, when he leaves office. And what does he want to do? I just thought that was a very odd thing for her to say, that would be... That just came out of the blue of her mind, I would think, that
the president was pretty popular man at one time with a lot of people, reelected twice already, and he's still going to have a lot of support even 10 years down the road, so there'll be some vacancies on the Supreme Court, so a lot of names can be thrown out, and he's a legal scholar, he taught constitutional law in Chicago, so he'd be a good nominee.
Ted, do you think that she just pulled that out of her brain, or was that some conversation went along somewhere?
That's a little paranoid, Scott, to say there's kind of deal going on here.
There's always deals in politics.
Yeah, there's deals. But I mean, I thought that was just a very strange thing for somebody to say. I mean, she could say, I think about him being an ambassador. He could be in my cabinet. He could do anything. I thought it was a very specific thing to say.
Well, she wants his support. He's trying to stay neutral, just like the DNC is. But like I said, the institutional players in the party is going to support Hillary. The president will eventually come out once everybody sees she's going to get the nomination and support her. So,
well, let me put it this way: do you think back in 2008, when Obama needed to get her supporters on board after that very tough primary season, that meeting that they had at that house, that she wasn't offered Secretary of State?
She wanted to be vice president. That was what they were.
You think she did?
Oh yeah, they were lobbying hard for that, and that didn't work out. So, I mean, she's qualified. So yeah, deals are made. Sure. I don't know if it was a quid pro quo per se, but if it was, so what? I mean,
I don't think there's anything illegal about it. Right. I think you could do it. I just thought it was a weird quote to come out of the blue that I would appoint him.
You look historically when I was just watching something about the 1980 election where George Bush was beating Ronald Reagan in Iowa. I think he might have even beaten him in New Hampshire. And they cut a deal right then to make George the vice president. So it happens. Lyndon Johnson was not a strong supporter of Kennedy back in 1960.
That's not the story, though, Bush gives.
Well, I just saw it on some history.
That could be paranoia, Steve. That
could be
a little bit of paranoia. But because a lot of people thought Gerald Ford was going to be the vice president. There was some conventional wisdom that said that back in 80, but they said they couldn't come together on terms. I think Ford said that in later life. Anyway. Back to this primary situation, because it is fascinating. We know who Steve would take: Hillary, obviously, over Bernie. Ted, you have a much wider field of people to choose from. Mm-hmm. But if you were choosing the guy, if you said, this is the guy who could be elected, this is my guy, who is it?
Well, my guy would be Ted Cruz.
Ted Cruz.
Okay. You know, electability, we know how he's going to be savaged, you know, in terms of, you know, in a general election if he becomes the nominee. But I think he has the ability, if he gets one-on-one with a Democratic candidate, to be able to stand his ground. And hopefully he can articulate best a common-sense conservative message in that regard.
As long as he doesn't read Dr. Seuss while he's campaigning, he'll be all right.
That was a needle.
But well, at least he'll do in 8 languages.
Huh? I was drawing a line earlier on before we took the break, and I think I lost my train of thought, but it was Trump and the things he said about other candidates. When this is all said and done, and we've got one Republican and one Democrat, when he's called, whoever it is, anchor baby, Ted Cruz, this is something mm-hmm. Donald Trump has said, aren't these tailor-made ads for the Democrats in the general election?
You bet.
Right. And that's why I really don't favor, you know, his campaign style in that regard. I appreciate what he's fueling on, the frustration of many people, because like you went with that word, the deal. We know in politics there's going to be deals. We know the way the political system, as long as there's free speech and Citizens United, there's going to be money exchanged in that regard. And the only way you can counter that is in terms of the individuals and the level of integrity and principle they have. And I think that's what's, going back a little bit here in our discussion, that's where Bernie Sanders is coming, and Ted Cruz is coming, and others from the anti-establishment are coming from in an aspect, is that to make changes in that regard. So it's not legal bribery, so to speak, in Washington, D.C., that we can have some honest discussion on the issues.
You know what the best ad will be for us if Ted Cruz is the nominee? The old flower, the girl with the flower and the nuclear bomb.
Oh.
We'll just do that ad again, and Ted Cruz with the finger on the button. I think that ad only ran one time, you know, and that was enough.
Well, but it's interesting, and maybe it favored the Democrats with having a less the field was not as big, but Bernie Sanders has not really said anything too negative about Hillary.
No.
So if Hillary is the nominee, it's going to be hard for the Republicans to pull ads like that against her. unless I'm wrong. If I'm wrong, let me know. Is there something you think that the Democrats have done wrong here in the election process?
And you remember, they've been going after Hillary for 30 years.
Yeah,
so,
I don't know if it's so much that. But I think what they'll be hitting on is going to be the Clinton Foundation. They're going to be hitting things, you know, with the uranium deals in that regard and all the world traveling they both have done and their $5,000 per second speech fees that Hillary has received, you know, like behind closed doors with Wall Street.
They were talking about that this morning.
Nothing new.
It's nothing new, but it's a point that's be emphasized. And if we're going to have an informed electorate in that regard, and I think that's where the younger people, they're going to pick up on things and idealism, are going to say, wait a minute, time out. This is not the way it's supposed to work.
And Cruz is some kind of clean politician, has no ties to any kind of organized business interests. Come on.
Well, not where it's in terms of just applying his own self-interest in terms of filling his bank account.
Well, whether you're trying to make a couple money or take us to the brink of oblivion because of your political views.
Well, that's an exaggeration. I mean, I know you're talking about his carpet bombing comment, in that regard in terms of ISIS, but that was really a statement how to deal with ISIS itself.
And the strongest again, that's military in the world. You've got to have somebody in charge that's got some sanity. This guy's a cuckoo.
This is a spin that we'll see.
They call him a cuckoo bird.
But now see, but here again, and I think this is interesting as well, the Republican Party. 2 weeks ago, I think it was 2 weeks ago, Ted Cruz ends up winning, so this becomes a much bigger issue, I think. Former presidential candidate, former leader of the Senate, Bob Dole, said if Ted Cruz is the nominee, it's cataclysmic.
Yep.
That's what a thing to say.
Yeah.
For the Republican Party.
And so did Terry Branstad, the governor of Iowa, came out and said, don't support this guy. He's nuts. You know?
Why are they doing that?
Well, again, they're part of the establishment in that regard. They're in danger. They're endangered species in that regard.
He just was reelected governor of Iowa, but pretty popular vote.
Yeah, but he's establishment in that regard in terms of a deal maker in that regard. He knows that money rules. It goes back to, you know, Haley Barbour and some other former National Republican, you know, committee chairman in that regard. It goes to, you know, all the lobbyists that come out of Congress. You know, now it's congressman 50% or more of the House. I may get my figures wrong, and I'd be corrected, so I'm going to qualify as become lobbyists afterwards. They cash basically, you know, in that terms of things. So that and then that's the things that people
Ted,
are
you
going
and I are
in
agreement on this. We got to get money out of politics, but we're not going to do it unless we can really sit down and have a serious discussion about this. We got to repeal Citizens United, which is the first step, and that's going to require a change to the Supreme Court. If anybody on your side is elected, they're not going to appoint people on the court that's going to change fundamentally that principle. You guys aren't going to sit down and talk about campaign finance reform or public financing of elections. You're not going to do it. So until you can build your own movement within your party to get the money out of politics, we got a lot of people on our side that are willing to do it now. Mm-hmm. We're not going to move this country forward on that issue.
Well, I think there's a distinction there of taking money out and the right, and just like Bernie Sanders. We'll flip the flop here on that regard in terms of his small contributions, $30 per person, no super PAC money in that regard. So it's not a question of taking money out. I think it becomes the rules of the game. And right now we have in Congress, and we have honorable people in Congress in that regard, but we don't have anyone who are going to lead the charge to change the rules. You know, like in Texas, you can't give contributions while, I believe, hopefully this is correct, I may have to be fact-checked on this, you know, while they're in session. You can't have, you know, lobbyists that are family members of, you know, representatives. It's one of the things that changes occurs. The question is, should we have leadership PACs? I mean, not limit all money, but basically such funds. Can candidates, you know, loan money to them, their own campaigns, and charge big interest in that regard? Can people go into Congress, and then what are the rules of them becoming a lobbyist? Those are things we can tweak, but we're going to have a new generation of people look at it in that regard. So it's not going to say, okay, money's not going to be spent again, or we have to have all public financing. It's those things I think we have to move towards. And I think that's where left and right should join together.
Is there any hope for Christie or Bush or Kasich?
I don't know.
But it'd take a tremendous establishment joining behind one of them to pull it out, which then we realize now we think it's Rubio is where the push is.
Kasich spent a lot of money in New Hampshire. He could come in third or fourth and still be viable. And I think he'll stay until March because, you know, he's got a good chance of winning Ohio, and a lot of delegate votes will be there. So he might want to cut a deal with whoever to be the VP or something with Rubio, or who knows what will go on.
Well, the political map that I saw when Obama was running the last time, and it's very similar this time, I think. We'll know as we get closer. The Republicans have to pretty well win Ohio and Florida.
Right.
The Democrats don't. There is a way they can get there without winning both.
Correct.
Now, that being said, you have a former governor of Florida. You have Rubio. You have Kasich, the current governor of Ohio. these guys can't be treated badly, because whoever right. it is going to have to, they're going to need these people.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can see some kind of deal being done with the establishment of their party. Mm-hmm. And they always do that. If you look back, Ted, they always do that. They always get the establishment candidate to run.
Well, look at Reagan. I mean, he put Bush in as number two, you know, after their contested primaries.
Could Bernie Sanders be vice president?
Well, sure. I mean, I think he would help give Hillary advice, especially in domestic policy, to try to move us into a more progressive era. And, you know, she'll have a tendency to want to compromise and get things done, just like President Obama has done. Now, you notice in his second term, he's been less compromising, wanting to leave his imprint on the future. So Bernie would be fine vice president.
Whoever it is, Hillary, Bernie, Trump, Cruz, Rubio, any of them, is it going to be a less divisive presidency? Because 8 years, it's been pretty rough going.
You recall, after President Obama was sworn in, the first thing that Mitch McConnell said is our goal was to defeat the guy. Now, if they take that approach again, then yeah. But I hope Paul Ryan and the other, hopefully, I don't know if he's moderate or not, compared to some of the wackos that are running now, he's pretty moderate. But we'll say, look, let's try to, in fact, he was at the White House the other day and they had a pretty good conversation. So let's try to change that whole dynamic and really move things forward. I hope that's... Ask Jim Jordan when he gets here. He leads a pretty extreme caucus group. Maybe ask him if he'll be moderate. Hope he will.
We might have to talk to him about that.
Well, I'm hoping, whether it's a Democrat or Republican, and it's probably way over idealistic in that regard, is that it seems that, you know, polarization is used as a divisive issue to gain positions, you know, on issues in that regard, to turn people against people. I'm hoping that we have a leader in that regard that sees beyond that, that sees that though we have a diverse, you know, population that have different rights, different interests, whatever, they all can live their life as they want to. But we can join together as one people in that regard, that we have one common theme. And that common theme is that you can live the life you want in your way, you want to live your life. But if you're going to be attacked, whether it's by ISIS or by economic, you know, catastrophe, that's where we're going to have each other's back, and we're going to be others, brothers and sisters in that regard. But right now, no, we use those cards of race. We use those cards of other nature in that regard, was, you know, war on women or whatever, to push away and polarize. And that's what I'm hoping will come out eventually with a strong leader who can see above all the fray.
It's certainly going to continue to go on, and New Hampshire is going to be very interesting. South Carolina is certainly going to be interesting. We have Congressman Jim Jordan coming up in the bottom of the next hour, so stay tuned to WWGH Radio. But we do thank Steve Chafin and Ted Calder for coming in. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
In place. For grandson of President Warren G. Harding, Jim Blessing,